Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is Anupama Sen, and I am a senior research fellow at the Institute, deputy director of the Energy Transition Research Initiative, and executive director of the Electricity Programme. I am today joined by two of my OIS colleagues, Ramat Pudine, who is Director of Research of the Electricity Programme and a Senior Research Fellow at the Institute, and David Robinson, who is also a Senior Research Fellow on the Electricity Programme here at the Institute. Welcome, Ramat and David.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anupama.
Now, while the recent rise in electricity prices has generated a lot of debate and concern among some commentators, other analysts have argued that the rises were a predictable and even a transient event and that we should move on. I'd like to put this to my colleagues in our conversation today, which we are recording on the 4th of October. So, David, perhaps I could start with you. Could you explain to our listeners why European electricity prices have risen so steeply this year?
Yes. Well, first thing to say is that we are talking about a significant rise in the wholesale spot electricity price, not in the retail price that consumers pay. These wholesale prices are set where supply equals demand at any time, and they reflect the cost of the most expensive generation source needed to meet demand at that time. This is frequently natural gas, which is a fossil fuel and must pay for CO2 emission allowances. So what we're talking about are the underlying costs of electricity, which are the price of natural gas and the price of CO2 allowances. I should say that the final price, wholesale price, differs from one country to the other, and that retail prices often are very different as well. So I guess the next question is, why did the gas price rise so much? And there are many reasons, but essentially because Europe is the swing market for global LNG, as explained in a recent paper by my Oxford colleagues from the gas program. When there's a global LNG surplus, as there was in 2019, then natural gas prices are low. But this year, due to various supply side problems and significant demand growth outside of Europe, the world market for LNG was short, and Europe, as the swing market, ended up paying very high prices. Also, CO2 prices rose substantially, and they too reflect supply and demand. However, in this case, the supply is restricted by policy decisions that were designed specifically to increase prices. And the demand for allowances is also up, partly due to coal substituting for natural gas due to the very high price of natural gas. And since coal has very high emissions compared to gas, the demand for CO2 allowances rose. Bottom line, most of the rise in wholesale electricity prices reflects tight markets for natural gas and CO2 allowances.
That's interesting, David. So in your view, was this price rise really a surprise then?
Well, you know, it certainly caught many people by surprise, especially governments and I would say most consumers. But really, there's no reason why it should be such a great surprise. Natural gas markets are volatile, and CO2 prices were intended to rise. Perhaps the fact that they were low for some years led to complacency. But if you add post-pandemic growth to supply, bottlenecks throughout the world, and you add some speculation, assume Russia is not likely to come to Europe's rescue with low-cost alternatives, the writing was on the wall. It is, however, interesting to note that the price of natural gas could just as easily fall next year as it rose this year. And looking further into the future, the main concern of investors in the electricity sector has been about a collapse in electricity wholesale prices due to the penetration of renewable power. So I think the message is that while we need to deal with price spikes, we should be aware the electricity prices will be volatile as long as they rely on fossil fuels.
That's really interesting, David. So Ramat, if I could come to you next, what are the consequences of the price increase for residential consumers and for industry?
As David mentioned, this was actually the issue of increasing the wholesale electricity prices. But I have to mention that the final electricity prices has three components, the biggest of which is wholesale electricity prices, which constitute around 35% of the total consumers' electricity bill. So it is not surprising to see that if there is a substantial increase in the cost of the wholesale electricity prices, that is also reflected in the retail prices too. It has implication for consumers in the sense that those who has already a fixed contract and their fixed contract has ended will see a price increase. Consumers who are on the default tariff, they are normally protected by the cap that currently exists in the GB retail market. But the cap needs to be adjusted to actually consider the actual cost of supplying electricity to consumers. The price increase is especially problematic for low-income households because the data shows that as a proportion of the total spending, the lowest income decile in the UK spend three times more on gas and electricity compared with those who are in the highest decile. And this is important when we consider that the 85% of the domestic heating in the UK comes from natural gas, and a surge in natural gas prices has an implication for the spending of consumers and fuel parity because it can squeeze the spending on other goods and services. Energy-intensive industries have also been affected. An example is the fertilizer producers, which we have heard a lot in the news about the possible shutdown and the implication that it might have for the production of the carbon dioxide, because this particular product is widely used in food supply chain and in the meat industry. So overall, the price increase has affected all market players.
So, Ramath, if I could ask a follow-up. We've seen a lot of energy firms failing due to these recent events. How has the electricity price increase affected retail suppliers of electricity?
The retail suppliers have also been affected too. The retail electricity market has always had a problem because of the thin margin. Even before the recent wholesale price increase, the margin on the retail side was very low and negative in actually many cases. In 2020, the average retail supply margin among the largest suppliers in the UK was basically negative. And the current price shock in the wholesale market resulted in a further pressure on the retailer margin. The problem is even worse for the smaller suppliers because they are more vulnerable due to lack of, you know, internal hedge, which larger suppliers have, but smaller suppliers, they don't have a natural hedge. By natural hedge, I mean that the larger suppliers are sort of integrated. So if they make a loss on the retail electricity, they can offset that loss by increased profit that they have from the generation and trading. But the smaller suppliers, they don't have that hedge. And also, they cannot engage in all the type of the, hedging because it is costly and retail market is very competitive. Huge pressures on the prices and the cost to cut it down. But there is also a more fundamental issue here is that after liberalization, to encourage that new supplier come to the UK retail market, the entry barrier for new suppliers has been lowered quite a lot. This resulted in massive expansion of the retail market for around 10 active suppliers in 2004 to around 70 suppliers in 2018. But we have to take into account that the a massive expansion of the retail electricity market has come with a cost. And that cost is that the many of these new suppliers that came to the market, they were really underprepared and under-resourced and had unsustainable business models. So with the shock, they were vulnerable to bankruptcy. And that was what is now happening in the electricity market.
That's very interesting, Ramath. So perhaps I'd like to stay a little bit with what happened in different countries as a result of this price rise. So, David, you follow energy policy in Spain very closely, and I wanted to ask you how the Spanish government has reacted to this and why has it done so?
Well, as they say, Spain is different. And in this case, the difference is unfortunate. Spain is unique in having a default tariff for over 10 million small consumers that reflects the hourly wholesale price. So there is no hedge against volatility in the wholesale prices. This was initially seen as an attractive tariff by the regulator because it did not include a hedging premium, and the regulator actively promoted it. But when wholesale prices began to rise this spring, the resulting increase in retail prices for these small consumers led to social and political alarm. The government reacted with a barrage of measures over the summer, but the key legislation was introduced and came into immediate effect in the middle of September. It was designed to meet a political pledge made by the president to lower retail prices to levels of 2019. The government did this mainly through temporary fiscal measures till the end of March 2022, including a reduction in VAT and electricity tax, suspending a 7% generation tax, suspending payment of policy levies, for instance, for renewables, and passing on some of the revenues from auctioning CO2 emission allowances. However, by far the most controversial measure was to introduce two windfall profit taxes related to the rising price of natural gas and CO2. So most generation from non-fossil sources, hydro, nuclear, renewables, were subject to these windfall profit taxes, and the revenue from the taxes will be used to help to achieve the promised reduction in prices. So in short, a very aggressive reaction by the government to deal with a political and social crisis that was largely due to a misguided tariff for residential consumers. No other country has needed to react in this way, at least not yet. And as Ramat said, the pain in all countries eventually arrives, but in Spain it arrived so quickly that it led to this kind of a reaction.
So how has the Spanish government's reaction been received, David?
Well, the immediate effect was to calm the political storm related to small consumers because the prices were immediately reduced. But there's very strong opposition to the measures from most other quarters. To start with, the affected companies, and we're talking mainly about the vertically integrated companies that own nuclear, hydro, and renewables, have argued pretty convincingly that there are, first of all, that there are no windfall profits, which is a good start. Their argument is that they sold their electricity in advance at fixed prices and that the measures are therefore confiscatory. The second point they make is that the windfall profit tax is discriminatory since it affects only certain technologies and companies, namely them. And third, that it introduces distortions in the way that the market works and discourages the use of zero carbon technologies and hence will increase emissions. The best example of all is hydro, which for efficiency reasons should replace the most expensive energy on the system. In other words, when gas-fired plants are running, it should be replacing them. But by doing so, it ends up having to pay a tax. So it's actually encouraged to produce less during periods of high electricity prices and to produce more when it shouldn't, which is, you know, when low-cost alternatives are available. So basically, we've got a system that is both considered to be confiscatory, discriminatory, and distorting. Now, large consumers were initially beneficiaries of this, but they've now learned that their suppliers, who are part of the integrated electricity companies that are affected, will now be facing a contract renegotiation to reflect the higher costs of the taxes. The companies have pointed out, by the way, the vertically integrated companies have pointed out that this is not only that there are no windfall profit taxes, but that the tax actually leads them to losses in the assets, in many of the assets that they have, and they wish to pass those costs on to their consumers. It's too early to say how the European Commission and the European Council will react, but the initial message from ACER, which is the Agency for Cooperation of Regulators, and from European market operators, is that these measures undermine the European single market and should be stopped. On the other hand, the price spikes have sparked a debate related to the sustainability of the current market design and the need to maintain public support for the energy transition. One thing is for sure, political and regulatory uncertainty will raise the cost of the energy transition, and there is therefore some urgency to clarify the situation.
That's interesting, David. And perhaps, Ramat, I could come to you next. I mean, I'd like to ask you a similar question in relation to the UK. David has said that Spain is unique. What about the UK? How are consumers in the UK retail electricity market protected against the consequences of a price increase?
Well, there are basically two key mechanisms in the retail electricity market of GP that are designed to sort of protect consumers. One is the supplier of last resort, which means that if a supplier fails, consumers are automatically transferred to a new supplier, which is chosen by Ofgem through a competitive process. And consumers, of course, can switch later if they want to any new supplier that they choose. The other mechanism, which has been on the spotlight for last 2 years, has been the price cap, which was imposed on the default tariff. And this mechanism limits the rate at which suppliers can charge on their default tariff for electricity. The cap applies to around 15 million UK customers and is reviewed every 6 months based on the latest estimate of the cost of supplying energy. When wholesale prices increases, the cap will be adjusted to reflect the increase in the cost of supplying electricity. And when it declines, like last year in March, the cap will be reduced to reflect the actual cost of supplying electricity to consumers. These are basically the two main mechanisms to protect consumers, and they have been in place for some time before the existing shock, and it is believed that they fairly protect all consumers against consequences of the events such as the one that we have seen recently.
So that's interesting. It's a rather different approach from the Spanish one. But do you think, Ramat, there's room for further government intervention in the UK in response to this event?
In principle, the objective of the policy, a government policy with respect to extreme event, should be to ensure that the security of the energy supply is ensured and consumers are protected, especially the vulnerable one. The government has already some schemes to protect the vulnerable consumers. Like, for instance, there are some payments available for low-income households, including like warm home discount, winter fuel payments, or cold weather payments. The government also may provide incentive for surviving energy companies to encourage them to take on customers from bankrupt suppliers that we have seen that during this recent price shock. But an important point here is that the intervention in the retail market is not straightforward. There is always a trade-off between competition and consumer protection. And the existence of this trade-off sort of limits the ability of the government to intervene in the market. The problem is actually worse when it comes to the price shocks like the recent one that happens as a result of the external factors. Because the scope of intervention is even more limited. Let's do not forget that the price cap that applied in the GB retail market was not introduced because of the high prices. Completely opposite. It was actually introduced because of the weak consumer response, which convinced at that time competition authorities that the lack of consumer engagement give sort of a unilateral market power to retail supplier over an inactive consumer base. This was an issue with the retail market that at that time justified intervention in the market in the eyes of regulator. But the current electricity price shock has different causes which are outside the electricity market. And this makes it difficult really to deal with an increased prices. Changes in the factors that have affected the prices, like the factors that David mentioned, can impact on the final price of electricity. For example, if the price of natural gas falls because of a milder winter, milder coming winter, then that will inevitably will be reflected in the price of electricity too, without any government intervention.
That's really interesting, Ramat, and interesting to look at these things in context. So I'd like to move to looking at the wider implications of these recent events. And perhaps, David, I could come to you first. In your view, does this price escalation indicate or could it lead to a structural change in the power sector?
Well, no, I don't think that the rise in electricity prices itself indicates any structural change in the power sector. It's a reminder that the industry is undergoing change and that, you know, as long as the system depends upon fossil fuels to balance the system, the prices are going to be volatile. However, I think what we are sort of forced to think about, and that the European Union is now thinking about it precisely because of the sort of response we've seen from the Spanish government, is whether or not the structure of the industry will change with the penetration of renewables. I think most experts agree that the deep penetration of renewables will lead to wholesale prices that are too low, not too high. And this is because the renewables have close to zero marginal cost. The more they run, the more zero marginal cost hours there will be, and overall, the lower the average cost of electricity. In this case, and for this reason, many argue that the energy-only market, which is what we have now, is not sustainable and will not be able to finance investment in renewables, or for that matter, in the flexible sources that back up the renewables. So the experts differ on what needs to be done, but there's basically three positions. One is that we can just leave it the way it is, let prices rise as they do now. That will create inframarginal rents that will finance investment. But we've seen the difficulty of actually allowing that to happen in Spain. A second group argues for a single buyer. That's the government or the system operator signing contracts, long-term contracts with investors that guarantee cost recovery. But we know from experience that governments tend to build too much to avoid any risk of supply disruption, that they choose technologies that are often expensive, and they pass on the costs and the risks to consumers. So that's not obvious either. The third group, which includes me, argues for a decentralization of investment decisions, mainly through long-term contracting. So we've got a clear sort of challenge, which is to think about what the future will look like. And this price spike has kind of forced, I think, the hand of regulators and governments to ask themselves, you know, where we're going. One thing is clear, and that's that the penetration of renewables will require new sources of decarbonized flexibility to back up the intermittent renewables and to replace fossil fuels. The flexibility could come from storage, decarbonized generation such as hydrogen, and flexible demand. And so far, most of the attention has been focused on storage and, down the road, hydrogen. But demand-side flexibility, DSF, is particularly important and something that I've been working on a lot for three reasons. One is that the growth of distributed energy resources, such as solar panels and batteries, creates new flexibility requirements on the distribution system near to consumers. The second is that the electrification of transport, heating, and industry introduces greater potential for demand-side flexibility using those if you want, electrical devices that can help to manage this local congestion, lower system costs, and therefore lower prices for consumers. And the third reason is that consumers now have options to rely less on the system, which raises questions about how much of the large-scale storage, networks, and generation is really needed for the system. In short, we need to be planning for a decarbonized electricity system where new sources of decarbonized flexibility will be needed. The debate has begun, but there's a long way to go. I hope the price spike leads to a considered debate about the longer term and does not focus solely on putting out an immediate fire.
That's interesting, David. And if I could just pick up on one thing and challenge you there a bit. You've argued that consumer or demand side flexibility will be central to the future decarbonized electricity system. But consumers are normally very passive. And some people have argued that there's a high level of inertia when it comes to things like consumer switching. So why do you think that will change?
Well, first of all, I agree. Consumers have been very, if you want, passive. And we don't know for certain that they will become much more active. We don't know that for certain. However, we can see that the reason why they weren't flexible in the past was that basically the benefits were very limited and the costs were quite high. Okay? It wasn't worth it. But there are at least three reasons to expect this to change. One is that the value of flexibility is increasing with the rise in intermittent renewables and the disappearance of the alternative source of flexibility, which was fossil. The second is that the cost of demand-side flexibility is falling with the new technologies and business models, in particular, digital platforms that use automation to control the timing of consumption, for instance, charging EV when prices are low, and also allow selling flexibility into markets with the help of aggregators. The third reason to expect change is exposure, like now, to very high spot prices linked to fossil fuels will encourage consumers to become more flexible as a way of limiting their exposure to those prices, for instance, through self-generation. But the barriers are still significant, and to overcome them, we need markets and tariffs that reflect the value of demand-side flexibility, which we do not have now, access for consumers and, say, aggregators to all markets, which does not exist in some cases, fiscal policies that support electrification, which itself supports demand-side flexibility, support for new business model like digital platforms, and finally, experimentation through pilot projects and regulatory sandbox to learn about what consumers prefer, what they need to encourage them to provide demand-side flexibility. So the conclusion is we need to rethink markets and regulations for a zero carbon system in which consumers will have a central role. Reforms we make today should move us in that direction.
It's interesting, David. So perhaps, Ramath, I could come to you on the wider implications of these events as we get into the last few minutes of the podcast. And so my question first would be, what lessons can we learn from these recent developments in order to avoid or minimize the negative impact of similar events in the future? It may not be the easiest question, but what are your thoughts on that?
That's a good question. The first thing that I can say is that the energy policy should pay special attention to extreme events and the implication that those extreme events may have for security of energy supply as well as for consumers. For instance, we may consider that the probability that to have a simultaneous impact or disruption in the global LNG market and gas pipeline import is slim. But even though that it is a slim chance that something like that happen, energy system needs to be able to absorb such shocks. It needs to be designed to absorb such shocks. Preparation for extreme event is very important, always is important, because it has direct consequences for security of energy supply. But it is more important even during the energy transition era. And this is not just to protect consumers and companies from the side effects of the price shocks, but also equally important to maintain public support for decarbonization initiatives, which can decline actually if reliability and affordability of energy are impacted by such shocks in the energy system. And the second point that I can mention in relation to this question is that the recent natural gas prices crisis tells us that we need a coherent strategy to manage the gas industry as the country moves towards the net zero economy. Currently, there is a huge level of uncertainty about the future role that the natural gas are going to play in the UK energy systems, because there are currently policies that indicate extensive electrification of transport and heat sectors, while at the same time, there are policies that somehow indicate there will be a gradual replacement of natural gas with hydrogen. So we need a clear strategy to better manage future shock to the system and reduce vulnerability that exists in our energy system. This is very important for all countries, but specifically in the UK, which is highly reliant on natural gas for power as well as for its heating sector.
That's a very good point, Ramath. And sticking with policies, could I finally ask you, are there any specific policies on electricity prices that could be implemented or designed in a better way?
A large share of final electricity prices is related to environmental and social obligations that are imposed on retail suppliers. These costs were added to final electricity prices because politically it is easier as they are less visible when they are added to electricity prices compared with the case that they are included in the general taxation. Also, when they have been included in the electricity prices, the impacts of these costs on final electricity prices has been masked because while the cost of public policies related to social and environmental obligation have been increasing, the wholesale cost of electricity has been falling over the last 10 years by an average of, 3.7% per year. So consumers were not seeing a major impacts on their bill as a result of the policy cost increase. But the problem is that when a price shock happens to the wholesale market, like the recent one, the impacts of these costs become much more visible on the consumer bill. So the thing is that the fiscal policy of energy sector has always been, a major point of debate among experts that it needs to be, redesigned or rethought to not only to manage harm by energy price shock, but also to promote efficient decarbonization because high and unpredictable electricity prices can actually discourage consumers and firms from investing in equipment that helps them to switch to electricity for transport and heating services.
That's an excellent point, Ramath. And one would argue that governments are already, certainly in the UK, beginning to think about these fiscal costs. So David and Ramath, thank you both so much for your time today. I really enjoyed our conversation, which really places the recent events in context and gives us some idea of the implications and the future path of the energy transition. To our listeners, I hope you have enjoyed listening to this podcast. May I draw your attention to the Electricity Research Program page on the OIS website, where you will find academic papers, reports, and articles of relevance on this important issue. But for now, thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.